Welcome to MGO Podcast 10.14, where we ask the question, have we ever seen a basketball team that's more like Trogdor the Burninator? We'd like to thank our sponsors, which of course are Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, and Lantana Hummus. Welcome to a very rare December podcast, but we have to have one because otherwise the flamethrower that is the Michigan basketball team might wander towards us. So to keep it pointed firmly in the direction of other teams, we're going to talk about the Michigan basketball team, which is killing everybody they see.
I guess they can shoot a little bit.
Well, if they can do that and they can also be...
Stop the shooting.
Yeah, that's a good combination. You, of course, are a season ticket holder.
I am. I mean, a few years now, but yes, I...
And how... I didn't go to either of these games, but how's the environment inside Chrysler these days?
Well... For the UNC game, I don't think I've ever seen an environment like that in November. Now, it's come up throughout the year when like they've played State or right. Indiana or something, but in November against a random non-con team...
I mean, they're not a random.
I mean, no, but they are in terms of like... Yeah, it's a nice win to have, but if they lost it, it's not like, oh no, now we have to win all these other games because of X, Y, or Z. It's like it's a dessert. If you win it, that's great.
A pre-meal dessert.
Exactly. We don't want to bring this up too much, but like, you know, Michigan is more of a football school in
not
its
anymore,
entirety.
Buddy.
Well, yes, but people attend those games. They don't necessarily always attend basketball games, especially early on.
Right.
And that's been kind of the knock, especially for a 9:30 tip on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
And people were there. And you know, it's not like, I mean, there are a lot of students, first of all, like, you know, because they have the court side seats, and then they have the one section, and then they go way up to the corner and fill up sort of the behind the basket area.
Right.
And it was pretty full. Like, I can't guarantee it was a sellout, but like, there were very few seats to be had from what I could see, and a number of North Carolina fans, which posted up in front of me, and I was like, this is great.
There
was a row in front of us that we kind of interacted with them a little bit, but.
Well, that must have been more enjoyable than projected.
Yeah. Because, you know, I remember I went to the Arizona game a few years ago against the Mitch McGarry team. There's a bunch of Arizona fans. And, you know, so you get these big games and you do get a number of traveling fans.
It was strange. I was perusing the message boards afterwards and some people were talking about how, like, it was a tough building to play in. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Well, there were some games, like, back in the Burke era and stuff that got... pretty loud the Stauskas year when they were really good. And that's kind of like you think, okay, if Michigan gets to this like sort of top 10 level, then people start like, oh, what's that? Is that a basketball team? Oh, you know, and you get your casual fans. And like the UNC game was very, very much like that. A little bit. Now it's their first trip to Chrysler, I think, ever.
Yes.
As I heard. So, okay. You know, that makes a little more sense too. But I was very, very happy with the turnout and the amount of yelling, of course, when you're doing what you're doing on the court, that generally leads to a lot of yelling.
Yeah. Well, this is actually the first, like, ACC Big Ten challenge that has actually brought a blue blood to Chrysler. Did Duke come once, or was that...
Not for the Big Ten ACC challenge. Right. That was, like, a December game.
Because it always seems like we're playing at UNC, and we're playing at Duke, and then we get, like...
They did get Syracuse a few years ago.
Yeah, but that's not the same.
But they're... I would call them a blue blood. It's not the same as UNC,
but no.
It's still...
They're like third tier, probably.
Really? You wouldn't put them in the second tier?
So there's only four teams in the top tier.
Oh.
And that's Duke, Kansas, Kentucky...
North Carolina. And then it drops to Arizona. And...
Michigan State, Arizona.
Okay.
Gonzaga, probably, by now.
Yeah, I mean, it depends how long your stretch is.
But yeah, I would put like Michigan and Syracuse in kind of the
UConn maybe. UConn's been good for quite some time.
I mean, they're in the AAC now.
But they have like 4 or 5 titles.
Yeah, they do. Anyway.
The interesting thing was that we were talking about also was, and this reverts a little bit of like the scheduling stuff, but like Michigan's hosted almost all of these teams now at one point or another. Like not just in the top tier, but like going down the list of like they're bringing in, you know, the Alabamas or the USCs or Texases of the basketball world in terms, and they're doing home and homes with them, which is great. Like we've gotten to see teams like we just went over to Kentucky. We have not, although we saw them in the tournament.
Kentucky won't play like at Indiana anymore.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, they don't. That's never going to happen.
Okay, but everybody else. I mean, Kansas has been here.
Have they?
Yeah, they were here. I think it was the Hoke introduction game.
Oh my god!
When him and he waved at Denard and everybody like sighed because they thought Denard was going to transfer and they've had UConn, they've had Syracuse, they've had now they've had UNC, they've had Duke.
But never have they absolutely obliterated one of these home premier non-conference opponents, and they did in this game. And it's even a little bit more impressive than it looks because they're down 21-11 to start in this game.
Yeah, they were down big. I thought a lot of those shots early on that UNC had were not necessarily sustainable.
Yes, I kept slapping parts of my anatomy because I was frustrated that they were hitting everything. Like just like clap and like hit your thigh or so, because it like when one of those goes down you're like, all right, and they hit a shot.
Yeah,
but then they seem to be hitting, I mean they were probably hitting 70% really early.
Yeah, they're shooting really high percent. One was like a bank shot from like a jump shot.
Yeah,
one was like a fadeaway that like May hit
like
over somebody.
A
yeah,
long two that he's hitting over Teske.
Yeah, and somebody hit one from like a step inside the arc.
Yeah,
and you're just like, I mean if this is how this night goes, that sucks.
And yeah, it kind of felt like I was like, oh, come on, man.
Yeah.
And then...
And Michigan missed layups.
Yeah, they missed
during that same stretch. So you're just kind of like, this should be...
Yeah, your head starts imploding. But the shot quality didn't change. The shot quality remained the same over the rest of the game.
Correct.
And Michigan was plus 27 in the last 30 minutes.
Which is...
Against North Carolina.
Right. A team that pretty much ran them out of the building last year.
Yeah, and I've been talking about how the Mo May matchup didn't go very well last year. That's actually incorrect. It was a Duncan Robinson May matchup last year.
I could see that, yeah.
And this year, I mean, you've got a freshman in Iggy who comes in, and his first real experience as a guy who's on the spot as a defender is against Eric Pascal, who's a pretty good player. He comes in, and you know, May splits his time about 50-50 between the 4 and the 5. And... You know, so half of this is Teske, and half of it is Iggy, and I guess another half of it is Isaiah Livers.
It's a lot of halves.
It is. It's 150%. But that's how much defensive effort they put in on Luke May.
Tell you what.
Who comes away from this game with a 90 O rating.
Yeah.
And that's, like, if you're not familiar with O ratings, they're trying to, like, project how many points this guy's possessions get in 100 attempts.
Okay.
So if he were to use 100 possessions in this game... UNC would have 90 points. Anything under 100 is absolutely terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I remember you making comments like that or in columns or in references.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're looking for at least 110. You're hoping for 120. And if you have a really good game, you're going to be in the 130s or 140s.
Okay.
90 for a guy who's a preseason All-American against this defense where he has 11 points on 14 shot equivalents.
Yeah.
I mean, that's night and day from last year, and I think that's because Michigan, now they don't really have any weak points on their defense.
No.
Like they had, I mean, Duncan Robinson, God bless him, became a pretty functional defender late in his senior season.
Yes.
But, you know, functional was as far as it was going to go.
It's different than
right
stopper.
And, you know, Mar became a pretty good defensive player as well, but... I think Iggy's an upgrade, and Livers is clearly an upgrade. And then, you know, I think Poole's about at the same level Mar was last year. So,
which is an upgrade for him from last year.
Well, I mean, he got a blow-by, I think, in the
early on
first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I was like,
ugh. Yeah.
But then that didn't happen the rest of the game.
Not really.
So he's kind of like the guy who, like, all right, he gets beat a little bit more than the other guys who are out there. But, man, if you put him out there 5 years ago, he's like, oh, he's our defensive stopper.
But he also made some plays off the ball. I think he had a steal or two.
So, yeah, I'm not.
Right. Sure,
but he's not X. He's not Matthews.
When he's your quote-unquote weak point.
Right.
That's...
And then Teske, I mean, what can you say? This was the kind of guy who might pull him away from the basket, might end up being kind of a vulnerable point, like a lot of big centers are against stretch fives, and it just didn't happen.
He moves his feet so well.
He got switched on to Nasir Little, and Nasir Little drove him from the perimeter, and he blocked the shot. And it wasn't even close. It was like, there's no chance. It wasn't even one of those, like, he reaches up and, like, barely gets it. It was like, get out. Get out. Get out. So, you know, he only had, what, 6 points in this game, but he had 5 block shots against one of the most athletic teams in the country. So, and then last year I kept talking about how, like, if Teske can just refine a little bit, get, like, that little bit more lift, he becomes a real impact defender. And I think we're seeing that.
No, he's. I mean, as good of a paint defender as Michigan has had. I mean,
in the Beeline era.
I mean, probably before.
Ekpe Udo was around.
Okay, yeah, Udo was there for like a year or two, yeah. And then he transferred. And he showed some flashes, but he was also like young when he was here. He was here for like his first or second year.
Yeah,
didn't redshirt, so he was pretty raw.
I think he was here for one Beeline year, and then he took off.
Yeah,
but.
I mean, even going back to, I mean, I didn't really start with Michigan basketball until like the mid-90s, but I don't remember a guy that was that impactful in the interior.
No, and he's, as I mentioned, he's a guy who does a lot without the ball.
Right.
So that's something that is a very precious thing.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, it's funny. Someone was saying to me, like, is he going to get maybe some NBA looks now? Like, just because now you're starting to see him at higher usage, and it, maybe not usage is the correct term in terms of Ken Pom, but, like, he's on the floor more, he's more visible, and his impact is being showed for longer stretches.
You know, he's not a great fit for the modern NBA,
yeah,
which is like a switch-everything league, and you got to be able to defend James Harden on an ISO.
Positionless basketball.
Right, and so, like, you know, what's an ideal NBA center?
Draymond.
Jaren Jackson.
Oh, yeah, I guess. That
and,
too.
And, like, you can see the differences between the two of them and why Teske probably won't be, like, a hot commodity. I mean, if he can shoot threes, though, and he's able to do what he's... I mean, he's decent in terms
of there's a backup role somewhere. When you can play defense and defend the paint like that, there's still going to be matchups somewhere.
Yeah.
That you're going to need a guy. Someone's going to get foul trouble. You could find a worse player.
But I think he's, like, a second-round pick, and then, like, he has a nice bench career. It's probably where...
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, back to the UNC game. So Matthews locked up Cam Johnson, who had 5 points, and they were all on one possession because he like.
Oh yeah, they had a 5-point trip or something.
Yeah, they like he got a bucket and he missed a free throw and then they got the offensive rebound and then he hit a three.
Yeah,
and that was his like 6 seconds where he got the score, and that was it. And that's the guy who came in as UNC's leading scorer. And one of the things that I think we don't talk about enough with Matthews is. He's an elite wing stopper. And we talk about that a lot with Xavier Simpson because he doesn't score very much.
Right.
But Matthews puts up, what, 21 points in this game?
Yeah, he had an offensive game as well.
I mean, I didn't love what was happening with the offense when he was trying to dribble for a shot.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, he has that little, like fadeaway.
Fadeaway in the lane that still kind of makes me a little like...
I mean, it's a good bad shot.
It's like senior Zach Irvin's mid-range game, where he kind of started to hit him, and you're kind of like, okay, these are going in at a mostly acceptable rate, but I still am not in love with the shot.
Well, I mean, if there's, you know, 8 seconds on the shot clock, sure, that's a pretty...
Well, that's different, yeah.
Well, but it's a good thing to have on your team.
Right.
Like, now that Mar's gone, and you don't have, like, the guy who's like, okay, go make a really tough layup with the clock running down, Michigan needs something.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be a fairly good option. I just don't like possessions where... You know, he's got the ball
and just
dribbling for 15 seconds. And
yeah.
Like, if he's really good at attacking an unbalanced defense, but he's not great at going and getting a good shot, like, he can get an okay shot.
He can get to the rim, but then
he's taking those fouls.
But then he's getting fouled, and you're kind of like,
oh,
is that what I do? Do we want that too?
But
and that was.
He hits 50% from three in this game. He hits 50% from three against you and Purdue. And his free throw shooting is actually ticking up. So he's up to like 60%.
Mm-hmm.
And he was 0-5 in the opener. And if we discount that as some bad sushi or whatever, like he's up to 70-ish percent. And we don't have a lot of sample size to say that that's going to be the thing going forward. But I'm hopeful that he's actually kind of turned the corner there.
Yeah, and he may never be the greatest shooter, but if you don't give him a lot of threes, like if he hits, if you give him a couple opportunities when he's open, it's fine for him shooting them. You just maybe don't want him taking 5+, I would say.
I mean, it depends on what they are.
Yeah, I mean, I just think, don't those threes go better to Poole or Brezdeikis or...
I mean, it's
or
about
Livers or whoever.
And it's about the look. If you have an open look, yeah, he's a good enough shooter where he's got to take it.
All right.
I mean, like, there are guys on the team who I'd rather see shooting.
Clearly.
But if he's taking an open three, that's a pretty good offensive possession.
Okay.
We've gotten so far into this, and we haven't mentioned Iggy. So, 21-11 happens. Iggy gets an early foul, and then that deficit builds mostly with Iggy on the bench.
Well, they had a stretch with Davis and Brooks that was kind of like, uh-oh.
So, but Iggy comes back in at about that 10-minute mark, and that's when the plus 27 starts happening. He's 7-9 from two. He hits a couple of threes. He has 24 points on 15 shot equivalents. That is bonkers. And UNC is not a great defense this year. I mean, they play a lot of May at the five, and he's definitely a below-the-rim player. Their other centers are pretty much just guys. They've kind of had a recruiting lull. I think that scandal is kind of kicking in.
Okay.
For him to be able to do that in a kind of a high-pressure environment where, you know, he's got a very athletic wing defender on him and he's able to go to the basket, avoid charges.
Yeah.
So UNC was able to set up on him, and he's able to jump laterally around the guys. And he picked up an and-one at one point, and he just avoided a charge another time. That stuff you don't really expect to see from a freshman.
No, and I mean, he's not... he's a freshman, but he's also...
he's an older guy.
An older year. He took a prep year, right?
Yeah, well, he's Canadian, so often they go to college a year later.
Okay.
It's a metric system thing.
Okay.
Got to take that year off to learn the metric system. And he also played on one of those, like, traveling all-star teams. So his, like, prep school in Toronto, like, went around and, like, played bowl.
Right, yeah, I remember you talking about that. And, well, and that was kind of the thing on him coming in, was we weren't sure how he was going to be as a set shooter to start, but that his going to the basket game, he finished around the rim well. He had a different, like, array of shots he would go to, and he could finish by, I think, both hands.
You may have heard that on the broadcast at some point. Also, Zion Williamson is very tall and large. These are things that occasionally get mentioned on college basketball broadcasts.
I've watched very little Michigan basketball on TV. I've tried to go to a lot of their games, so maybe I have a little bit of an out there.
Yeah, they've mentioned it. They've mentioned it pretty much every game.
I mean, they're seeing it. I mean, it's true, right? Yeah, I mean,
he's able to switch hands and take advantage of that near the basket, which makes him an elite finisher there, despite being 6'7", and so their usual elite guy at the basket.
Something else from, like, the four position that we haven't seen Michigan really have. Like, we've seen JR3 kind of crash a few times, and he'd go up hard with a dunk, or...
he's a cutter.
Right. But Brezdeikis will put it on the floor and create some.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who's a... I mean, Michigan needs that on this team.
Yeah.
A guy who can go get a bucket. And he is definitely that. The thing about the shooting you mentioned is, I keep referencing this really good UM Hoops post, which had all of his shots charted from high school, which apparently Crossover does, which is a really nice feature. And if you separate out his off-the-dribble threes from his catch-and-shoot threes, like, he's not good at off-the-dribble threes, but he took a ton.
Okay.
And when he was able to catch and shoot, he's a 40% plus three-point shooter. And I think we've seen that early. He hasn't taken any off-the-dribble threes. And when he gets set for a three-pointer on a catch and shoot, it looks like he is just as good as anyone else on the team.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, so far he's knocked those down.
And, you know, I think we talked about this on the season preview podcast with Ace, but there are, you know, Romeo Langford is a guy who's ready to go now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a 5-star, and that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Nasir Little is not. So he's a guy who really struggled in this game. He was just putting up long twos. That was his only make, and he was driving into trouble a lot. And the difference between him and Iggy, like, who's the number three freshman in the country? It's not Nasir Little.
So is that based on who they are now, or is it based on projections as to, like, what you're going to be?
Well, I mean, Little is more of a freak athlete than Iggy. He's, like, Iggy is... like a small NBA four, and Little can play on the wing legitimately and like not have any athletic deficiency against anybody in the world. So if you're projecting to the NBA, sure, I'd rather have Nasir Little. If you're projecting to college, there's no contest.
Yeah, especially on this team.
On any team, really.
Well, yeah.
Like, you don't think Iggy's starting?
No, I do. But I just think he's a wonderful fit for Beilein. Because when you can have... He's just another guy you can play potentially five out with.
Yeah. So UNC is stuck at under a point per possession. And that felt like kind of a bad defensive game at points.
So,
our expectations are completely insane now.
Did you hear Matthew's quote after the game?
Yeah.
Which was just... I mean, it was fantastic. Because they were like, oh, you played good defense. You held them under their... Or he's like, no, he said, I think there's another level we could get to, or we didn't have a great game. And the guy's like, well, you held them way under their season average. He was like, yeah, but they were way over our defensive average. Yeah. And I was like, that's like, this team plays defense. Like, they're good at it, but they play with, like, this hunger. Like, you know, like, I think it was Matthews came flying out of nowhere to block a shot, a jump shot into the stands.
That was right after the Teske block.
Right, and just everyone is fired up. Like, they're as fired up as they are about a defensive stop as they are about, like, getting a bucket or a dunk at the other end.
People are now taking pictures of, like, John Teske, and he looks like...
Yeah, and they do that arm thing where they, like, lock arms after a big...
That's the one thing about the season I don't like.
You don't like that?
I don't... It looks goofy. It's weird.
I mean, all right, but, like, the perception of Michigan basketball for a long time has just been, oh, they're skilled, but they're kind of soft,
nice,
and
boys.
You can push them around and stuff, and it's like, I don't need them to go out and, like, commit crimes, but, like... Like, showing this, like, intensity on the court of where you're going to, like, no, you're not going, we're going to stop you. And then we're going to be really fired up about it. And, like, Matthews is running his mouth.
Well, I mean, Matthews has, like, the most punchable smile in the Big Ten. I say that out of all
just in
all
the Big
love.
Ten?
I mean, I haven't seen all of college basketball. But, like, man, he starts smiling and you're like, oh, my God, if he wasn't on my team, I would hate that guy.
Yeah. I mean, part of it's just because, like, you can't shake him. And then he lets you know about it, and those are the guys you're just like...
Well, I mean, this goes back to the famous smile picture that Mark Greger took.
Right, against the Nick Ward thing.
Yeah, and, like, there's that journey segment, and, like, Nick Ward goes down, and you can read Charles Matthews' lips on this journey segment, and he says, "Get up, bitch." And that's kind of like... That's the attitude of this team. And it's not like Michigan didn't have dogs before, Stauskas and Burke and all these
sure.
guys. But... So it's a different kind of thing.
Yeah.
One last thing about the UNC game, and then we can move on to Purdue. Michigan had two offensive rebounds in this game, which usually that's a really bad sign because you're going to get some level 20% of your shots are gonna fall to you. But Michigan was abandoning the offensive boards almost entirely, like they're taking free throws with nobody at the line, and that's. Because they were trying to offset UNC's speed.
Which they just go super fast.
Right. They did that successfully. So they had 70 possessions, which is way below their average. It's barely above Michigan's average. That's a tempo win for Michigan. And in the second half, you know, they go into the locker room and Roy's just peeling the paint and they come back out and they're going even faster. But Michigan's back. So you have guys driving in for contested bad two-point jumpers.
Just rushing everything.
With 25 seconds on the shot
clock.
Right. And, you know, I think that's a real advantage of being this kind of team against a team that is just so high tempo. Is once they spend so much practice time and effort on the tempo, that once you get them into the half court, they're not as efficient as maybe they should be.
And they took and like you said, like they kept taking a lot of bad shots. And that just kind of makes me wonder about, like, I mean, do you think that Roy's telling them, hey, take a step back? Take a three instead of like a 20-foot jumper or an 18-foot jumper. Like that just seems very. I mean, maybe we're just so used to looking at a lot of these advanced stuff, but like it just seems very rudimentary now.
Well, I mean, he's got, you know, a lot of guys who are very good in transition.
Sure.
And it's been working for them. And I think they came in with a top 10 offense.
Sure.
Like in terms of tempo free, not just on pace. So you know, I think it works for them. It's just that. Maybe they don't have enough of a plan B, especially early in the season.
Yeah. They did get their offensive rebounds.
I mean, eventually they had one at halftime.
Yeah.
And then two of those were from, like, deep bench players in the last minute of the game.
Okay.
And then, like, three of them are, like, team rebounds, which means that, okay, they get the ball back, but there's no putback involved because
sure.
it just goes out of bounds. So, you know, I thought that for most of the game, they did a really good job at denying offensive rebounds. And even so, like, they're like a 40% offensive rebounding team, and they were at 30 even with those kind of like bonus rebounds. So I think that's another win for Michigan in terms of like, this is the weak point someone might attack. It's like, not happening.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, I was looking at their numbers too on rebounding, and like we talked about how like their whole approach is just everybody box your man, and then the guard comes in and swoops in, and like, and that's kind of the case because nobody really has a lot of rebounds. Like, everybody has five.
Yeah, the whole team had five rebounds.
Like, Matthews had seven, but like three people had five and one had four. And that's,
well,
just,
Matthews had the two offensive rebounds. So on defense,
so there you go.
Everybody has five rebounds.
So they've equally dispersed.
I mean, that's the very definition of getting it done as a team.
Team rebounding. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's take a break, come back, talk about Purdue, which was a completely different game that was also a total blowout.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
So Purdue comes in They're a very different team than last year. Ken Pomsa likes them, and they have two unfortunate losses, not at home to very good teams. So they were in a. I watched most of the Virginia Tech game, which was a really good game, like a really fun game between both teams, between two good teams. And then they probably should have beat Florida State at Florida State, but there was a pretty bad no call on Carson Edwards right at the end, and they go down and they hit a winning shot. I think this is a good team.
Yeah, no, that was the Big Ten ACC shootout game. So that was like a few days ago, right?
Yes.
And then they had to come here. So that's a week for them.
Right, and then they get like, I think they get Michigan State next. So they're,
they get Michigan and Michigan State in the Big Ten opener weekend?
Yeah, I mean,
what is
someone's got to do that, but it should probably be Rutgers.
It's always Rutgers.
I mean, Rutgers did just play Michigan State.
Didn't they beat Miami?
They did. there were like three or four challenge games going on at the same time, and I kept flipping between them. And then eventually I was just watching the Rutgers game because I was like, what is going on? And then I turned on the second half against Michigan State, and I was like, oh, right, this is what Rutgers is.
Yeah.
They're I don't know how they scored, 37 points?
I think they were, like, decent defensively last year. They got better.
They were decent defensively this year. If you look at non-projection-based Torvik right now, I think they're top 10 in defense. So,
well,
they're bad, but they're not like a complete walkover like they used to be. But anyway, let's stop talking about Rutgers basketball.
Not a Rutgers basketball podcast?
No. So Michigan just beats the brakes off Purdue right from the start. They're up 31-16. And I tweet out, golly.
Yes, you did. And then everybody takes a scoring break for like 5 minutes.
Well, there were like two of those.
Yeah.
And you know, Michigan doesn't hit I hate like field goal drought stats. Because like Michigan hit four free throws in that time. It's like those are also points.
They are.
Like, I don't know, man. But anyway.
So and it's four Michigan-made free throws.
It's true.
This is something to get excited about.
Actually, yes.
That's what I'm saying.
But so, you know, Purdue's down 15 and they like make one push at some point to get it back down to, I think, 12.
After it was like 62-50 or something.
And then Michigan just bangs down.
Hit a couple more shots
and then set to 20 again, and that's all she wrote. Big ups to Brandon Johns for a solid performance in keep everyone losing to Michigan by more than 17 points time. A little nervous there at the end,
and he made two free throws.
Yeah, he hit some free throws. He rebounded well, so that was not very important in the scheme of the game, but we have a streak going on.
Can we talk about John Teske versus Matt Painter?
Sure.
Just how, because like that was the whole thing with Painter, right? Is like the Wagner matchup and how he's like baffled because he doesn't know how to play it, and he like switches. He's got to take Isaac Haas out of the game because he can't play and all this stuff. And then Wagner leaves, and Teske comes into this game. And obviously, like, weren't we joking around somewhere about like how like Matt Painter's got to be so relieved to see John Teske on the floor or something like that? And then he goes, 1 of 10 for 3 to start?
Yes.
So it's kind of like, all right, Teske might have this 3-point shooting thing, but we haven't really seen it. He knocks down one, and he hits 2 against Purdue. And that was when I really wish I would have been on the other side of Chrysler so I could just see the look on Painter's face as it's just kind of like, you've got to be kidding me. Is there a factory that these guys come from? Like,
well, the interesting thing about Painter is that he's had some pretty good success against Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, they won last year
They won twice last year. And It still feels like he goes to these press conferences and he's just like, oh my God, I want to die. Why? I mean, I he's my favorite coach in the Big Ten other than Beilein, but
sure, and he seems like a really nice guy who loves to talk basketball.
Yeah, he's a good dude. He respects the media. He says smart things to him.
And Beilein, like he seems to get along with, you know, there's other coaches that get snippy and such, but he seems to be somebody who just is, he's having a good time doing what he likes to do.
They haven't recruited as well as they need to. Like, I was going over the roster, and it's like they've got the composite 150 guy and the composite 174 guy and the composite 354 guy. And, you know, you can take some of those guys, and some of them are going to be Mar.
Yep.
And it's going to work out for some of them. But when you have, like, whole classes that are pretty much all those guys, that's not great.
There are also guys that they're going to be the most effective at the late in their career.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to be a guy that you plug in as a sophomore and be like, oh, he'll probably carry us.
I mean, they're starting a walk-on at power forward.
Ugh.
And he's got 10% usage, and I mean, I don't think that they can go with him anymore. I mean, Wheeler came in and he was pretty good. He hit some shots.
Yes, so he did hit shots.
He took some shots, and that's something that is really important to do if you're Purdue, because Carson Edwards had 50% usage in this game. I don't think I've ever seen that before, and I've looked at a lot of tempo-free box scores. I have never seen 50%. I don't think I've ever seen 40% usage. I probably have.
Never. I mean, 40's had to have happened sometime.
At some point, sure. But 50% usage for this dude. He has an 82 O rating.
Yeah.
82.
I mean, it's not really his fault, right? I mean, like, that's just kind of...
I mean, he's got very little support from... So Ryan Klein can run around and hit some threes.
Yeah. And he almost played the whole game.
Yeah.
And was super efficient.
And they're playing Nojel Eastern, who can't shoot at all.
Yeah.
And he's just not any. They're playing that walk-on kid. And then they're bringing in Evan Boudreau. And Boudreau had a really terrible game. He probably... I mean, Michigan gave him more shots than I think they wanted to.
So okay.
He has 12 shots. He hits two of them. And, like, he misses some bunnies. He misses some open threes. Like, they're going to seem better when that guy is hitting shots.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't... They got to play that guy next to Harms and play both of them through.
I mean... They didn't play Harms. Played 19 minutes.
I mean, that's what he's been doing all year. They've been splitting minutes to the five dead even.
Because he was the guy that, like, he had flashes last year where you're like, you know, he might not be Haas, but he's, like, growing into that or whatever. And I mean, but if you can't even play him, if you can only play him half a game on this team where they just don't have anyone else.
Well, and we should talk about why is that Painter continues to switch all screens.
Yeah.
So, you know, Harms is a better option at that than... Haas was, but you're still pulling that big away from the screen.
Yep.
And Michigan, you know, last year they had Mo Wagner.
Mm-hmm.
And Mo wasn't going to be the kind of guy to post up and just dominate a guard. Doesn't matter who.
Right.
In this game, you have John Teske, and Carson Edwards is trying to check John Teske.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that John Teske is not an NBA top 10 pick, but he's enough of a center that you cannot do that unless you want to get that guy posterized. And Teske did it a couple times.
And then that's it with that.
Yeah, and then you've got to go back to something else. And they didn't really. So, you know, Purdue continues to have this kind of mania about their defense against Michigan where they're like, we got to do something else against Michigan. And, you know, worked a couple times for them, especially in the Chrysler game last year.
Okay.
I mean, Michigan had 69 points in that game.
Yeah.
But, you know, it really didn't work here. I mean, Michigan puts up a 1.23 points per possession.
Yeah.
I mean, they shoot 50% from three for the second consecutive game.
Yeah, and it was they started like what, 6 or 7 or something? Like it was.
And they were all wide open looks.
Yep.
So then you start switching everything, and that's not working either. So it's like, all right, well.
And Jordan Poole is now, like, it seems like
he's on fire.
So he had a rough start. We didn't really talk about him much in the UNC game. He had a rough start in that game, and he hits that three, like, right as... It's almost like that Karras three against Michigan State where he hits it, like, running out. And so he hits it, and they all run to the locker room, and I think they go up 4 against UNC. And then he had a nice second half.
He's 5 of 8 from three in that game.
Right. And then he comes into this game, and again, he goes 8 of 9 and 5 of 5 from three.
Yes, he is 10 of 13 in his last two games from three.
I mean, and this is, you know, okay, not this, but like this is sort of reminiscent of what we kind of thought we were kind of going to get from Poole, like where he was going to be an offensive driving force and a knockdown shooter. And we haven't really seen that much this year. Like he's had a couple flashes, but the last game and a half has been like, this is as good a scoring option as Michigan has.
Well, there was a hilarious moment in the second half where the ball comes around the horn to Poole. He's got a guy like flying out on him.
I know what you're going to say.
On a closeout. He takes a dribble. The guy flies by and he cans a three. And next to him, Matthews is like, give me the ball.
Who's wide open. And that's probably the play.
I mean, if he's 4 of 4 at that point.
Yeah.
And he just got this guy to jump past him on a crazy closeout. Like, he can take that shot.
Sure.
But Matthews is like, and then when he sees Poole going up with a shot, he just like goes, oh,
he just
no.
falls over and is like, come on.
And then he's doing this thing when someone else makes a three where he's like, yeah, and he makes like a shooting motion. And so he's hunched over, the ball goes down, and then he goes, oh, yeah, the shooting motion.
Kind of like pushing him, kind of like pushing him back down the court. And he was like...
Well, I mean, at that point, Matthews is feeling it too because He's hit two, or I think, or three early in this game. He's 3-6.
Yeah.
I think he missed his last three. Maybe he missed his last two.
Okay.
But so he's a guy who's like, all right, yeah, he hit 2-4 against UNC, so he's like, I'm feeling it.
And that's really good for him.
Yeah. So he's feeling it, and he's like, aw. The guy who's 4-4 gets to shoot it.
It's like one more.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, because that's traditionally the pass, right? Is you make the extra pass to the even more open guy, no one's going to get out to him. And, you know, Poole just took the one dribble, got away, and hit it, which is fine, because as Jordan Poole would, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's technically an off-the-dribble shot, but it's really
like
not,
a set, yeah.
Because he had so much time to reset. So.
Right. It just, it like that, like you're talking about, like that whole sort of drama that played out was...
Right, yeah. It was amazing.
It's the little nuances that we've been able to see as Michigan is just murdering opponents.
Yeah, and they're up like 20 points at the time. Right. It's like... It's okay, Charles. It's all right.
Which is awesome. Like, I love to see that. I want, like, this team, like, wants to be, like, they play, I mean, not that anyone wants to lose a game. That's a hot take. But, like, they play like we don't want to lose a game. Like, we can't have a bad game. We don't want to get beat defensively.
Well, they don't want to lose a possession.
Well, that's probably true.
Like every trip down the court, it's like, okay, we can win or lose on this
yeah.
possession.
And they play like it.
Yeah. So, Purdue came into this game with more than half their shots from behind the arc. So
okay.
This is a real test for Michigan's ability to prevent three launches. So 38 twos from Purdue and 24 threes from Purdue. So that's another solid win in that department. They lost Klein a little bit. They lost Boudreaux a little bit because they were focused on Edwards in a way that they were not against, I think, anyone else they played this year. So they were coming off people and doubling down and giving up more looks from three than they had against Villanova, where nobody was worth coming off a three-point shooter.
Right.
And they still, even in that context, did a really good job limiting Purdue threes. So, all hail Luke Jaklich, as per usual. and three of those threes were from Harms, too. So, like, if he wants to shoot threes...
Oh, that's right. He made one. Because after the Teske one... Because after Teske hit the first one, I was kind of like, oh, I want to see Matt Painter. And then Harms hits one, and I was kind of like, oh, yeah. Well, that's a wash.
But that's, like, not his...
No.
I mean, like...
I mean, maybe it is. I haven't seen it, but...
If he's going to be shooting... Like, I'd rather have Teske be like, all right, you can have that one.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Just have a three-point shootout between Teske and Harms, you'd probably take that.
Well, or Harms and Poole.
Yeah, sure. Okay. I was trying to be... Keep everything in context, Brian, yeah. But...
The other thing that I think the Purdue game was interesting about... The other thing that I thought was interesting about the Purdue game is that, you know, they had a real defensive focus on Iggy and what happens when Michigan has to go away from him. He has 13% usage in this game. You know, he takes what comes to him. He didn't really force anything up because he didn't have to because Michigan was finding open threes elsewhere. So he was able to use his gravity to help Michigan, even though he's not a great passer right now. Like, he's not a guy who's...
Yeah.
Gonna find every
drive and kick, and
he's gonna put the ball up,
right?
But
and that's what he's been successful at his whole career.
It's something that I think is very common with
sure
young players who happen to be ambidextrous,
really
geniuses.
Good.
well, we talked about, like, there was a game a couple of weeks ago where he was just putting them off the backboard from every angle, and they were dropping.
Like, yeah,
my God.
And that's kind of the thing, is, like, they have different guys that can generate offense. Like, it's not a one guy who's you have to stop. Like, Brzdikas puts it on the floor. Poole has learned to create his own shot.
Well, the top usage guy in this game was Xavier Simpson, which didn't go that great because he's...
He did have a lot more shots.
He takes 11 twos, which is like, whoa.
Yeah.
He has five of them.
Yeah.
I think a couple of those might have been Kobe assists as well on the misses. And then he takes three threes, which is like, I'm not really feeling that. But that's what happens in the switch everything defense, is that he's got Harms on him. And Harms is like, you can have that. And he's like, all right, I'll take it.
But he also had seven assists. So he's moving the ball to everybody else.
And then he had six assists against UNC. He has 13 assists and two turnovers in two games against top 20 foes.
Yep.
I mean... He doesn't score a lot. You don't need him to. But
they have guys that can fill it up.
But, like, there's a big difference when he's off the court.
And that's the thing, like with Beilein, is his offense is going to generate shots for people because they run sets to get guys open looks, and when you have a guy that can deliver that, especially when he has also the fallback game of an awesome pick and roll with Teske, that I thought that also happened a little bit in the UNC game of where Simpson made a couple really nice pocket passes,
right, and Teske
just dunks, yeah. And that's another staple that Beilein has done, even going back to like what. Darius Morris and Jordan Morgan.
JMO.
Yeah.
Well, and then, Charles Matthews, I think, has hit Teske for dunks on those little pick-and-roll alley-oops three times in these games.
He had four assists.
Yeah, he also had, I think, three turnovers. So it's
well,
like
that's... Not,
but yeah, he's becoming more of a facilitator, which is a nice thing to see. And then, so Edwards has an 82 rating on 50% usage. John Teske has 17 points on 10 shot equivalents. Jordan Poole has 21 points on 9 shot equivalents. And you just can't keep pace with that, especially when Michigan is such a lockdown defense.
The defense they play, when they shoot like near their ceiling, like we've seen the past couple games.
You can't stay in contact.
No. I mean, maybe Duke has just the sheer firepower.
Sure, Duke or Gonzaga. I mean,
maybe, but like this is the one seed. Hands down, when they do that. Now, if, you know, they go super cold and they can't hit shots, but I don't know, man. Like, the last few games, they've just generated good offense. Yeah, they've also knocked down shots, but they've gotten to the rim. They've moved the ball well. They haven't turned it over a ton. So, like, Beilein offenses usually evolve in that way throughout the year of where they start getting to more efficient play.
Yeah, well...
And they're seeming like they're kind of getting there.
Yeah, and this is, I think, perhaps the most veteran... lineup
weird.
They've had at Michigan. Like, you have a junior point guard. When's the last time Michigan had I guess Derek, but Derek wasn't really...
He was a different player the second half of his senior year.
Right.
Everything before that was a different column.
Because he's injured, he's in and out of the lineup.
And he just played differently.
Well, and he also misses half a season.
Yeah, early on, yeah.
So in terms of, like, how much experience Xavier Simpson has on the court, I don't think it's unprecedented because you did have senior year Walton. But other than that, I mean, Darius leaves early, Trey leaves early.
Right.
Like, you know, there's not a whole lot of guys who have stuck around, which is a good thing about recruiting a guy who probably doesn't have an NBA future, is that you finally have a point guard who's going to be around for 4 years.
Well, it's kind of like I said during the UNC game, because I was talking a little bit about Luke May, and I was like, isn't that kind of like the ideal guy you want to recruit? Like, yeah, okay, you're... top three pick in the NBA draft, sure, yeah, you want those guys. Not everyone's going to get those guys, but like, you want a guy who's going to be like a four-year player on a team. Like, that's kind of,
I mean,
your...
you want a couple of them, but you want to fill them in with like a guy like Charles Matthews, who's
right.
an NBA athlete,
sure,
but he's also a senior, and he's been, it was at Kentucky for a year, he's been here for 2 years, so he's got 3 years in the system.
Yep.
You've got Teske, who's a junior.
Yep.
And that's a lot of experience in your starting lineup in a way that Michigan hasn't really had the luxury of having, because they've been too good at developing guys for the NBA. And I think you're seeing kind of the ignite stage of a Beilein team a little bit earlier as a result.
Right. Yeah. Because they've, and, but I mean, we even noticed that because we went to the practice or the open, yeah, the open practice, yeah. Right. And they didn't hit a lot of shots in that game, but they moved the ball well, and they got a lot of open looks. And you could see just sort of a natural flow in the offense. There wasn't a lot of bog down and reset and what do we do now. There was just ball movement. Guy, he either makes or misses a shot. But
well,
like,
I mean, what I saw is a lot of stuff that looked good on both ends. It's like a spring game, right? Like, so is the
sure.
defense good or is the offense bad? So to me, like... that looked like, I don't know, this is a stupid thing to say, but like, you know how you're watching a basketball game and you're like, wow, this could be a turning game. This could be like a
game.
That's kind of what that scrimmage felt like. Maybe not to that extent, but I thought like, this is a lot of good action against a lot of good defense.
Right, which is like, that's going to bode really well when you're able to create kind of anything against this defense.
Yeah. So, man, here we are.
Yeah, this is kind of unprecedented.
It
I
is.
Mean, that second-year Burke team was also a little in that.
Let's take a break. We'll talk about that. And we'll,
sounds good.
We'll take a look at Michigan's next two opponents in the next segment.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoalblog.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
You're an MGoBlog reader, so you've probably already met Gordon Fall. Yes, the guy who comes to all of our events. Yes, he is named after Gordie Howe. Yes, Wayne Gretzky knows this and says hi, Gordie, whenever they cross paths. Seriously. Gordon has stepped up to sponsor this podcast, so we should tell you what he does. Gordon is a licensed agent with New York Life Insurance. He specializes in holistic policies for individuals with long-term goals and short-term financial situations. He would like to expand that roster now in anticipation of opening his own shop next year, and would rather work with fellow lifelong Michigan obsessives. If you're starting out in your career, growing your family, or beginning to think about retirement, you should talk to Gordon about crafting a plan for you. Visit GordonFall.com to start the conversation. That's GordonFall.com.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
I bombed Korea every night. My engine sank into the salty sky. I didn't know if I would live or die. I bombed Korea every night. I bombed Korea every night. I bombed Korea every night. Red flowers bursting down below us. Those people didn't even
as you were mentioning
us.
This feels like an unprecedented basketball team at the University of Michigan.
Well, usually you go through the non-conference and they drop a game here, they look bad here or there, and you end up with a couple of losses, and you're kind of like, all right, what can we get into the Big Ten with? Well, that hasn't happened, and you're starting to look through the rest of the schedule in terms of, like, okay, who could trip them up? And yeah, there's always chances for losses.
There's games. There's a game at the Troll Center, yes.
Right. But just in the, you know, before the Big Ten season starts, it looks like they may have navigated the biggest landmines.
You know, except for a couple of games, like at Breslin, at the Troll Center.
Yeah.
Maybe at Nebraska or Iowa, which
they do go to Maryland, I think, late. So they the one thing that does kind of suck about the schedule is they end their last four games are home versus Michigan State, home versus Nebraska, at Maryland, at State, which is like.
I mean, that's a tough. I mean, I like
that's
it
a tough
like
ending. You want a good ending?
Yeah, I like.
Okay.
I like.
Well, you got it.
The I like having the title kind of decided maybe like with a lot of tough games between a lot of tough teams, but this is a team that I think, you know, unless they stub their toe in the next two games here, is going to go into January as a one seed. This is a team that looks like they have performed at that level. They have a couple of good wins, one on the road, and one, I mean, they beat Providence at neutral site, and it's like...
So that's 3.5 to 4 good wins out of only, like, what, 7 or 8 games?
Yeah.
And, like, they, you know, like you talked about, they have Northwestern and South Carolina, but then they have Western, Air Force, and Binghamton, and then you're in January.
Yeah.
And that's...
So, yeah, I mean, what was the Burke team? They were 18-0?
Yeah, they lost, I think, at Ohio State, like, mid-January. Yeah. And they were, like, number 2 or something.
The Kraft game.
Yeah, and they just started that game so terribly, but then they almost came back and lost by 3.
Yeah, they were down 20.
Yeah.
And they just kept chipping away. They didn't have time. And that was... I mean, I remember that game because they were... I think it's called icing the screens. So, Michigan's pick-and-roll game was... just lethal, and they had Kraft like way overplay the screens, and Michigan didn't have a solution for it until the second half, and then it was
almost
too late.
Yeah,
and that was one of the things that made Aaron Kraft a really great nemesis. Like I liked him as a player because I like guys who do stuff without the ball.
Yeah,
and like so they had this thing, and they beat Michigan, and it was like and then Michigan like figured it out and conquered Aaron Kraft, and he threw that air ball up, and it was just good. It's a good storyline. I just enjoyed the shape of it.
You're all about the narratives, aren't
you?
Yeah,
it was good. But like, I mean, this is a team that hasn't won by fewer than 17 points, which they did against North Carolina.
Which is just like I don't have ends to these sentences.
Yes, that's exactly right. And, you know, there's going to be some bumps here and there, but when you pair this defense with a team that now looks like a B-line offense, like they have a rock-bottom turnover rate. Their three-point percentage is up to 37%. You know, if the early struggles on offense were something that Michigan is leaving behind and this defense is going to be as consistent as it has been, I mean, people are talking about, like, is this the best team in the country? And, like, it could be. I mean...
Are you concerned at all with depth? Because they're really only playing 7 to 7.5 guys.
I mean, there's an argument for that. But also, you know, we've seen guys emerge, like, halfway through a season. So,
sure.
You know, Mitch wasn't even starting until, like, the tournament. It's a tough system
right.
to get your
but
head
he
on.
Was... He played a lot.
He played a lot, but...
And he was a very different kind of player.
Well, I mean, so... You know, Derek Walton had his midseason renaissance. Like, there are guys who kind of pop up halfway through the season. And, you know, you're seeing some flashes there here and there from Johns, maybe to Julius. Like, yeah, I think they'll find another guy or two. And they have an opportunity coming up here against the next 5 opponents probably to maybe mix some more guys in. Maybe not Northwestern.
Maybe not this week, but the last 3-4, yeah.
We'll see. Like they're going to Northwestern, which has been a tougher out.
Have they lost the last 3 times there? I feel like someone said that.
Well, they had the Derek Pardon, Julia Louis Dreyfus game.
Yeah.
Where they, I mean, it's fine. They clinched their bid.
There's that one. There was the weird one at DePaul last year.
Did we lose that one?
I think so. After they started well. And then there was, I think there was another one that they lost two or three years ago where... It came down to the very end.
Well, I think it's going to be a little bit of an easier road this year because Northwestern is very dependent on Derek Pardon, who's kind of that 6'8", 6'9", center who hasn't really had a lot of success against John Teske. Hmm. He had like 24 points or something against Indiana. He's a good player, but he's also going up against Juwan Morgan for a big portion of that game, and Juwan Morgan's 6'7".
Okay.
So John Teske is a totally different ball of wax there. And then Vic Law is their other main scorer, and Vic Law is the kind of guy who gets the Charles Matthews matchup.
Okay.
So
and we've seen Matthews...
I mean,
turn some guys off.
Law's a decent player, but he doesn't have great athleticism, so he kind of had a struggle against... he didn't have a struggle. He had to put up a lot of tough shots against Romeo Langford, and he hit those shots. But I feel like, you know, his average expected shot value isn't going to be very good. So then it's about, like, can Michigan continue their scoring ways? And probably.
Hope so.
There's kind of a dip when you go on the road.
And they've really only had... Well, they did have that tournament... That neutral site tournament, but I was about to say they only really had that one game at Villanova, which obviously they looked good in.
Yeah, well, and they did light it up against George Washington.
Yeah,
but they didn't score that well against Providence. I don't know. So, you know, if they can beat Northwestern, and I feel like they should beat Northwestern. South Carolina looks pretty bad.
Yeah,
like they're 3-3 or 4-3 on the season. They just barely squeaked by a bad team at home. Like they're they're not a tourney team. They're an NIT team.
They lost to Providence. They also lost to Stony Brook.
Right. Stony Brook.
That's at, well, that might have been, I don't know where that game
that
was.
That might have been a tournament.
They also lost by 20 to Wofford. So
Wofford is the top 100 team.
The Terriers.
Terrier, we played them in the tournament 1 year.
Yes.
So they should get through these two games with not too much. I mean, I hate saying that, but
I hate saying that about Northwestern just because of like the dumb stuff that's happened, but it seems like Michigan is a better team.
Well, and the things that they want to do on offense are things that Michigan is particularly well suited to deny.
Okay.
So they don't really have a great point guard to initiate the offense.
Because McIntosh is...
Yeah, he's out.
Finally appled out.
Like, their big two scorers go right at Michigan's two best defenders outside of Simpson.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they'll have to shoot, but I feel like they're going to be able to do that, and I don't know who's checking Iggy.
That's a good point.
Yeah, so... and then it's like, can they use these next 4.5 games to maybe integrate to Julius a little bit more, integrate Johns a little bit more? Because Johns can play the 4 and the 5.
Yeah, I think a bigger guy is probably more. Because Brooks comes in, and he's obviously not the defender that any of the other guards are, but he does run the offense. He can shoot a little bit. And I feel like the spot they're going to need somebody is more at a wing or as a big.
Yeah, I mean, I like Brooks off the ball more. Like, when he has to play the point and Simpson goes to the bench, it's always kind of rough.
Yeah.
So, if you could get...
So, you'd say if you get Julius in...
Maybe. I mean,
it might be...
Freshman B-line point guard, always kind of a rough spot.
Right, and the thing I think is, like, you know, injury I don't really want to talk about, but, like, if Teske gets in foul trouble or something... Now, you do have Livers coming off, but there are going to be matchups that are going to be tough when, you know, your biggest guy is still 6'8", 6'7".
I mean, people are kind of dogging on Austin Davis for reasons that, I mean, he's fine.
But he hasn't really played. And, like, they tried to play him in a couple games. He got hurt one time, and then he hasn't really played.
I know, but, like...
So how's he fine?
Well, when you're looking at the matchups we're talking about, like, are you going to put him out there against Luke May instead of Livers? No.
No.
Like, so if May's at the five, you can go small.
Yeah.
And if Purdue's out there with Evan Boudreau, who's like a stretch five, well, I want Livers out there too. So I think it's been more of a matchup thing. I mean,
all right.
I don't think he's ever going to get more than 10 minutes in a game, but if there's a situation where they have a banger down low and Teske gets in some foul trouble, I'm fairly comfortable that Austin Davis is going to be able to D up and rebound and not be a big liability.
All right.
I mean, he's shown flashes.
Yeah.
Like, not...
It just hasn't been as consistent, and, like, you just kind of wonder, and that's all.
Sure.
That's all. And it's a very nitpick thing to say, because they have 7 contributors, and, like, we've seen Brooks score, we've seen Livers come off the bench and score, we've seen them play multiple positions. The lineup can be fluid, I mean, you know, between that and, you know, a little bit of free throw shooting. Those are the only things that kind of give me a little bit of pause.
You know, if Matthews has actually turned the corner,
mm-hmm.
I think it's fine. Like, Simpson is never going to get there. It's just life. But Matthews has, you know, enough of an outside shot and enough of a jumper that you think, okay, he should be able to get there. And if he's 70% on his last X number of attempts, then he did have an uptick late last season. He added about 5 or 6 points late in the season. So if he can continue to do that, then I think they're pretty much fine.
And then Teske's...
I mean, he was 5 or 6 in the last game. He's kind of in the same boat where it looks like he should be a pretty good free throw shooter and it just doesn't happen yet.
Okay.
But, I mean...
Because he's a guy that you can see getting, kind of like Matthews, where you can see both of them getting fouled a decent amount.
Right.
Because the position that they're going to take a lot of their shots in and the way that they're going to get a lot of those shots are going to be highly contested.
Well, and I don't think that either of them is bad enough that you could go to, like, hack an X. Right?
Well, didn't they do that to Matthews for a while, or was that just Simpson?
They did do it to Matthews for a while.
Yeah.
And I think he's kind of moved beyond that, and so it's a little bit of a deficiency.
Also... When has there been a game that a strategy like that would have been relevant? Like,
right.
All of these games are, you know, we need to actually score some points first before we think about, like, hacking somebody.
Well, and then if we're talking about, like, end-of-game stuff, you can take out Teske and put in Livers.
Right.
You can take out Matthews and put in Brooks.
Right.
And then you have a pretty decent lineup.
Yep.
As long as Simpson doesn't.
Well, somebody's going to have to make some at some point, but...
Yeah.
When you're up 17, there's not lot of foul problems.
Simpson can inbound.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah, I think the schedule looks good, especially for the next month. There's not a lot of concerns on this team. It's as, like we got back to at the beginning of this segment, how unprecedented is this? I think that second-year Burke team still maybe has a, I guess I don't want to say have a higher ceiling because of the defense that this team plays.
They were a 4 seed.
Yeah, in like the toughest Big Ten ever.
I know, but is this going to be a 4 seed?
No. I mean, hopefully not. It shouldn't be. Right. No, that they're playing, like we're arguing about, are they playing like a 1 seed? And I think the argument against that is like emotional defense mechanisms. It's not like on-court play. It's like, I can't say that Michigan's a 1 seed because I don't know that I've ever said that.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that you could say is like maybe Villanova, UNC, and Purdue are a little bit paper tigers.
Yeah.
And like they've I think all three of those teams have taken a step back from last year, and but Michigan didn't just beat them.
Right. They didn't get a nice bucket to win at the end. They basically controlled the game for 75% of it every game.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, what else could you do? Win by 40? Like,
I mean, the one thing that does kind of pop up is I think the Big Ten is having another one of those seasons like the Burke season where you have 8 or 9 legitimately good teams. Even Rutgers at the bottom and Illinois at the bottom aren't awful. And, you know, you look at the Big Ten on KenPom and almost everybody's in the top 50. There's, I think, 2 teams who aren't in the top 50, and that's Illinois and Rutgers, and I think Minnesota might be kind of...
So you can even lose some of those games. It doesn't kill you because you're losing to good teams, and you're not going to have, you know, you lose at Wisconsin or something. That's not a bad loss.
No, and you're going to get opportunities for quality wins, but this is going to be like a really kind of knockdown, drag-out fight, I think, unless, I mean, this could be... Like, I remember watching a lot of Big Ten games that year because it was just a lot of fun.
Sure, and every game mattered because there you had 4 or 5 teams that were super even.
Right, and I watched Northwestern versus Indiana, which is not something I usually do.
Yesterday?
Was it yesterday?
Or whenever it was.
Whenever it was. And I was like, oh, I'll put this on and enjoy it. And I did, because Romeo Langford is a really interesting player.
Yeah. And Indiana's going to be relevant to Michigan.
Right. Northwestern, not so much. But
this week.
But they were in that game the whole way. So
yeah.
They're like, there's not going to be a lot of easy outs in the Big Ten.
No.
Like, you can't go to Penn State and be like, oh, we're definitely going to win this game.
Yeah. Because, I mean, they beat Virginia Tech, I think.
They beat Virginia. Like, almost everybody in the league has something.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Minnesota has a couple of good wins. Ohio State has a couple of good wins. Iowa has a couple of good wins. Rutgers has a good win.
So the thing about Iowa, that is the one kind of uh-oh on the schedule, is the only game, the only time we play them is there. So you lose that, you could lose that particular tiebreak.
Yeah, I mean, they did lose to Wisconsin, so.
Right, and that, because I remember watching a little bit of that game, and I'm like, who am I for in this game? Like, I don't really know who's better and all this stuff. And then I was like, oh, well, Michigan has to go to Iowa. So and adding an extra conference loss to them might be beneficial.
I usually root for Iowa just because I like Fran. Because I just like a basketball coach.
Okay, but I'm talking about like with like what is relevant to Michigan.
Sure,
we can root for bankers or accountants, whatever you want to do. And
I mean, I think it's going to be a good league. It's going to be a really fun season. I like the 20 games.
Yeah, yeah. That was the other thing. Is my friend's like, when do they start playing conference games in December? And I was like, well, they started last year because they bumped up the number of games. Right, it's like 18, and now they're at 20.
No. Oh. Last year they bumped
it up because of the tournament.
Tournament.
Yeah, that's right. But they're playing what 20?
20. Yeah.
Which. It's kind of like usual. Like, who else is Michigan going to schedule instead of these games? It's probably going to be some
Binghamton again,
right? In December, because you still are going to get your tournaments that you're going to play in, because everyone plays in a tournament nowadays, and you're still going to get your Big Ten ACC challenge. And Michigan is good enough now that they're constantly going to get a respectable team. I mean, they've gotten Duke and UNC the past couple years, but I mean, even you know they're getting Syracuse, they're getting the teams like you know Virginia before and stuff. So. But now you're basically getting rid of some of those like boat anchor teams for teams in your league that, you know, yeah, okay, it depends what the schedule of the league is, but those are games you'd probably rather play, I think.
Well, and it is important for the league for Rutgers to not be such a huge boat anchor.
Yeah.
Because like the first year they were in the league, I think everybody in the league lost a seed line because they played Rutgers.
I remember you bringing that up.
And now, I mean, they beat Miami. They're respectable.
Well, that's big.
And that's something that I think will help when it comes to seeding time. So I think Michigan, like, if they can navigate these next two games and then win those bye games, you're looking at what is the league record they need to be a one seed.
Yeah.
15-5, maybe. I mean, this is a league that's on par with the ACC, and it's a league that is a hair behind the Big 12 in the KenPom ranking. So,
yeah, it probably depends what those losses are, I would say. Like, I don't think you could have, if you have five conference losses, you probably can't have like
5 out of 20, though, not 5 out of 18.
Sure, but five, you probably can't have one against like a... Can't lose at home to Penn State or something.
Well, if you lose at home to Penn State, you're just moving one of those wins to like at Michigan State.
I guess that's true too. So I mean, I don't know what's worse. I mean, is there part of the formula that's like you'd rather have big wins or you'd rather not have bad losses?
I think you'd rather have big wins, and there really aren't bad losses in the league this year.
Well,
home against Illinois and home against Rutgers are the only possibilities. I don't think either of those is happening.
Yeah,
just call it a hunch.
Yeah, I can co-sign that.
So if you had to move them around, but you know, I think you're looking at a team that has a real good argument. And it depends on how Nova does, and it depends on how UNC does, because those are two real headline wins that, you know, if Nova kind of scuffles and UNC kind of scuffles, don't have the appeal of like Gonzaga beating Duke.
Yeah.
But there's four one seeds. There's not one. So.
Right. And they will have chances for other big wins.
Well, plenty of chances.
Whereas Gonzaga will get to play the WCC.
Yeah. I mean, Gonzaga has prepared for this eventuality.
Right.
Their non-conference schedule is
like other teams' conference schedules.
Yeah, I don't know. They need to get out of that league. Go to Mountain West or something.
Is that any better?
Yeah, Nevada.
Okay.
It's decent.
They're decent, good. Yeah.
But, so, you know, you're looking at possibly the best basketball team of the John Beilein era.
And
what does that mean when they've had two national runners up?
Right. And you look at who's not playing this year and what people are saying about them, and it's not like a flash in the pan. This team looks like they're... This team doesn't look like a team. They look like a program.
That's a good way to put it. All right. Let's take a break, come back, and talk about...
Do we have to?
Hockey.
Great.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Is your online store sluggish, outdated, underperforming? You may be suffering from chronic crappy website disorder. One in three online stores built by your brother's friend's nephew currently suffers from chronic crappy website. But now, there's hope. Introducing Human Element. Huel has helped hundreds suffering from CCW to turn their online stores around, creating fast, secure, and engaging online experiences that turn visitors into customers and put products back at the top of their search engine game.
Before Huel, I had abandoned carts, browser errors, and poorly animated GIFs. Now, with Huel, I can focus on what I'm actually good at, running my business.
Jeffrey, would you be a deer and pull the Ferrari around?
Side effects may include increased traffic, customer conversions, better ROI, compliments, elation, and early retirement. Why live with the disappointment of chronic crappy website disorder? Speak to your Human Element consultant today to see if Huel is right for you.
Hey, this is Seth from MGO Blog. Like many of you by now, when it was time to refinance my house, I talked to Matt Demarest at HomeSure Lending. Since we had bought only a few years earlier, it was amazing how different the experience was between Matt and our bank. He knows his stuff, gives you and your loan his personal attention, and can shop with different lenders so you're always a priority. We are constantly getting similar feedback from readers who used HomeSure Lending when buying or refinancing a house in Michigan. He knows the mortgage industry well, which becomes a big deal when your loan is as complicated as mine was. If you haven't met him yet, he's tailgating this year with his HemGo bus at the Charity Beer Garden on 327 Hoover. And if you're buying or refinancing, reach out to HomeSure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus, with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor, downtown.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'ma see what it do when it's too much. I'ma see what it do when it's too much. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, one, two. Yeah, might not want to hear, but the truth hurt. My pot belly getting big, need some new shirts. Everything ain't great, but I can do worse, cause I can go to the dentist with my tooth hurt. I don't watch Blue Earth when I get stoned, or pull apart an ink pen like a wishbone. Used to spend hella time in the friend zone, loin cloth in a tie like a Flintstone. Big afro wig with a chin strap, I'm thinking real hard, chewing on a pen cap. Some songs just more for the headphones. It's about time people get set straight. They got my stomach upset, K-O-P-T.
You can be more positive about hockey. They're kind of having a rough start there.
4 points against 3 home games against Wisconsin and State.
Yeah, I mean, it's not...
Who's going to score the goals, Brian?
Well, you know, it's not... You know, the power play? The top power play?
They have a nice power play. They get one. They seem to get one every game. That still doesn't...
Yeah. Well, so, to your point...
Well, we started the segment.
Yes.
Oh.
We have.
I thought we were just talking.
You...
Well, at least I didn't say anything really bad.
To your point, Michigan goes to a shootout with Michigan State in their most recent game. No scores from the first 3 players, and the 4th guy off the bench is Luke Morgan, who has been...
You would have thought maybe Slaker.
He's been, you know, he's been... a decent player, but
Morgan,
has he scored this year?
Once on a breakaway.
On a breakaway, so maybe that's what they thought. But
I guess,
yeah. I mean, they have a top line, and then you know they've had the Pastryov line has been pretty decent, but no.
Well, Nick has been good. Becker's been all right. The third spot, they've scratched Mike a couple of times.
He's hurt.
Is he?
I think so.
Oh, well, he played on Friday.
Did he?
I thought so. Maybe not.
It's hard to tell.
He did not play last night.
You know, he didn't. It's hard to tell with those camera angles on BTN Plus.
You mean with the 1980s like video
of all the
visuals
of all the sports to tease us with like 1980 quality videos. Hockey is the worst. I mean, Anthony talks about this all the time, and he's absolutely right.
Yeah,
that it's embarrassing that it's 2018 and Michigan hockey can't get a road game televised.
Well, they don't have games televised anymore. Very rarely. Like they'll put some on BTN and you know, maybe some state games or, well, not this weekend, but we'll get on, like, Fox Sports Detroit or something. But no, I mean, everything is pretty much BTN Plus.
And it's like, dude, FS2 exists for a reason. Come on, let's go. Like, I don't. What else are they putting on
well,
there?
Well, last night, because somebody tweeted about it, was, I think it was Penn State Syracuse Women's Volleyball
that was
or something.
That was BTN.
Okay.
Well, what's on FS2?
I don't know.
I mean, it's annoying to me because I'm flipping through the channels and I always see like Notre Dame versus RPI or whatever because they have a separate deal with like CBS Sports Television.
No, well, no, it's NBC.
It's NBC.
Right, so it's kind of like football where they get all their home games on NBCSN.
So,
or a number of them.
You know, it's really annoying to me that Michigan can't work anything out to get some of their games on television because this is embarrassing. Because... I'm not going to pay for a BTN Plus feed that isn't going to work half the time. And when it does work, it's worse than not watching the game at all because it's like, what happened? I have no idea. It's really, really frustrating. And like, what?
I mean, that's I mean, college hockey does that because like I was trying to watch the Lake State series and I had to go to I don't remember Flow TV or something and they wanted to charge me like $30 a month or something for it. And I'm just like, is anyone doing that? Is anyone being like, you know what? I really want to watch these like WCHA games, so I'm going to spend $30 a month. Like, and right. What kind of stream are you even getting?
And like, this is the thing where, you know, it'd be nice for the fans, but it's also a recruiting bonus. Like, if you have a guy who lives in Alberta and
he wants to see what's going on,
and his parents are like, "All right, well, how do I watch these games?" And you're like, "Oh, we have a professional streaming solution that actually looks like someone cares about it." That's a different thing.
Yep.
Doesn't Anthony watches OHL games? And,
he does. You know, and that stream was, we had that on the other day, and that was good. It was better than the Michigan stream.
So, I mean, this is like a thing where like, I was talking to Andrea Fisher-Newman, and she's like, oh, Ward's doing a great job. And I'm like, I can't think of a thing that Ward has actually done. Like, there's, I'm sure there's a lot of internal stuff, and there's kind of, there's something to be said for Ward Manuel not being a guy who other people know is a bad AD.
Sure. Like, I mean, are we talking about this?
Sure, not having a world famous bad AD is an accomplishment. But like, I don't think that he's really done anything. Like, there's no connectivity in the stadium.
Yeah.
Like, there's not been any kind of fan facing event that has improved the
re-signed life. Beeline.
Okay. That falls under like not being the worst AD in the world.
Yeah. We lost the Arkansas series.
Whatever.
We lost the Virginia Tech series.
Whatever.
Whatever. What do you want to play, Arkansas State?
Well, I mean, they're playing Washington that year. So,
okay.
Like, that was always going
to
happen.
I'd like to play fun teams.
I know, but...
Although now, I don't know. Does it even matter? Is it better to just have layup games? That's a different thing.
I mean, this is something that really grates, because it feels like that's something where putting money into this thing would make it better for fans and would also help your competitiveness. To be able to say, yes, you in Alberta, you can watch everything.
And the thing is, it wouldn't be... Well, yeah. I mean, you could at least stream it on your website.
They probably have contractual issues with the Big Ten, where it's like, but, you know, Minnesota gets their games televised, Notre Dame gets their games televised, every Minnesota game is televised.
Yeah, it is. So then, what's the issue?
What's the issue is, well, Michigan hockey doesn't have as big of a fan base as Minnesota, so they'd have maybe buy time and work it out themselves. They just don't care to. And so, like, where is that money going that could be going to making your hockey program more competitive? Probably going to the 356th person in your athletic department who's making 120K. And it's like, what are we even doing here?
I'd like to be able to see hockey games better.
Yeah, I mean, this is like your third sport. This is your number three sport, and you can't even like make it visible to your fans. So, pretty frustrating, because I'm paying a lot of money for tickets, and I feel like that money isn't being used to do anything. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Do you want to talk about the team? Or?
Sure. We can talk about the team.
I was kind of thinking about this just yesterday. And
two Michigan State games that are not televised really kind of sent me off on this.
The same thing happened the Penn State series. Same thing happened the Wisconsin series. Nothing's really televised.
You know, Michigan State used to be on TV, and now it's not. And everything's on TV. You can turn on Water Buffalo Racing, probably, I think. And now...
Well, the finals. I don't know if they have the semifinals.
Not the semis.
Right. Don't be ridiculous.
Don't be greedy. Anyway, go ahead.
Anthony brought up a couple points. Well, one thing I said to him was, like, I said, okay, after watching a game and a half against Michigan State, I was like, do Michigan State's defensemen look better coached than Michigan's defensemen? And he just looked at me and kind of laughed. He's like, yeah. And Michigan has, what, four drafted defensemen? And then they have a junior and then a nice freshman in Blankenberg. So you have a six-man group that looks like they should be very good. And two seniors, Quinn Hughes. And they just, I think they don't do a great job of keeping teams out of the slot. They do sometimes, and they look good. But other times, they really don't. Like, that's what happened up in East Lansing. And Michigan does get shots in the slot, but a lot of times, or in the house, but a lot of times it seems like they're off balance. Someone's hitting them. There's a stick like in their way. There's just, it's not an open look. There's a guy that's on them while they're trying to shoot, like a contested jumper versus like an open look. And, you know, you look down State's roster and their defense, no one's drafted. They don't have anyone that looks like, oh, this guy is a surefire high end player or whatever, but they're seemingly pretty well organized regardless of who's on the ice. It's not like there aren't mistakes or whatever, but it just seems very inconsistent on Michigan's defensive end. Like, it's not individual talent. It doesn't seem to me. I've seen most, if not all, their games. It's just me. I don't know if it's effort. I don't know if it's organization. I don't know. It just seems more like consistency, and I don't really know what to do with that.
Well, in Michigan State's specific case, they play a particular defensive style. And that is, we have six goalies.
So you mean involving like their...
So anytime the puck goes beneath the dots, all five of those guys
are deep,
are going to set up in the house. And it's this kind of like scaredy cat hockey approach. And you saw it
on the Saturday game, which is a 1-1 tie where they have, like, what, 13 shots or 16 shots in regulation?
They didn't have a lot of shots. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, they don't have very much skill, and they allow you to have the puck in the zone, but they're just going to, like, they just play prevent defense, basically.
You know, Michigan gives up a lot of goals.
And then the goal that Michigan does give up is a power play where Luke Martin throws it.
Right, a centering pass.
Up the middle of the ice on a power play. And it's just like, you know, Michigan gives up an inordinate number of grade A chances. I also feel like the goaltending has been absolutely horrible all year.
Really?
I mean, nobody has an 830. Like, if you have an 830, like, that's not a defense problem. Like, I feel like we haven't gotten one or two, like, you get one or two good saves in a game, and then everything else goes in the net.
So, I feel like I haven't seen Mann play terribly. There may have been a bad goal here or there that I'm not remembering, but it just seems like a lot of the things that teams score come from high danger areas.
Well,
and
that's true, but also you need to make some saves on those. Like, you're going to have to, like, actually make some grade A stops. That's the case for all goalies, and I feel like Michigan's have not been doing that at all.
Well, that may be the case. It just seems, and you know, this goes back to the other thing of, like, you know, of Michigan's lines and their offenses. Like, we talk about the SNL line, and it's good, and they generate things and they create chances. After that, La Pasta line's okay, but a lot of it's very blue collary, and it worked last year because they were the third line and because you got better matchups and you had to game plan for, you know, the DMC line and then the Slaker and Norris. Now, once that top line is off, you have kind of a hardworking, kind of gritty line that comes out, and they've gotten some, like, tip goals and stuff. Becker has 4. I think Nick Pasta has like 8 or 9. But then once they're off the ice,
if they have 13 goals, then that's a good secondary scoring line at this point in the season.
But the problem is that there's then nothing after that. There maybe literally is almost nothing. I mean, we talk about, like, Brendan Warren's a senior. He has like 3 points, 1 goal. He, like, Winborg has like a goal. Morgan just scored his first goal.
Yeah.
The fourth line, you know, Raby and Van Wy, I thought they look all right on a couple of shifts. They get a couple of rushes, but it's nothing that's super consistent. And so,
I mean,
they're
a fine fourth line. It's just that they don't.
And so that's what my point is. Like, when you have that kind of gritty, garbagey goal third line, it works. I don't know that it works as a second line.
Well,
and
you know, it would work if they were. I mean, they're scoring probably what, top 10 in goals.
I mean, I don't know what their goal ratio is or that. But I do know that they had 46 shots on Friday and scored 3 goals. They had 30, mid-30s shots 30. Last night and had a goal. And most of the time it's like a power play goal or it's a either an SNL goal or it's like Nick's Pasta scoring it. And okay, that's fine. Maybe that's nitpicking too. It just seems like if you shut down, you play a team that takes away your top line or they don't score goals at night, like, you're not winning that game. It doesn't matter who you're playing.
I mean, but they lost to Penn State 6-7. I mean,
they did, and that was the one outlier. Like, Anthony talks about how they don't score even strength goals except that series. But also, like, Penn State has been notorious for having not great goaltending. Their defense is also very loose. So they gave up a lot of looks from in close, and a lot of that was top line, and I think Nick Pasta had 2 or 3 goals in that game. It's just, again, it's the same thing, though.
I mean, the problem is, to me, the problem is that they're losing games like 5-4. Like, they lost to Wisconsin like that. They lost to...
They didn't lose to Wisconsin that. They tied them 2-2 and 1-1, and then they tied State 1-1. And, like, you can't... Those are two teams that Michigan's better than...
Sorry, I'm thinking about earlier game.
Oh, well, I'm saying this year, like, you look at the last 2 weekends where they have 3 out of 4 games are at home against teams that are not great. They're not tournament teams. They're maybe borderline top half teams. And Michigan gets 4 points from those 3 games. I just, like, you're not making the tournament doing that.
No.
And you lose those home games. So now you got to go win all those games on the road. And is that going to happen? I mean, sure, it could. But, like, Adam and I were talking after the game last night. I called him and we were just talking about hockey as much as we could think of and a lot of the specifics. And I was just like, last year they needed to maybe up their effort level and clean some things up, and it kind of happened, and they kind of had that aneurysm of leadership moment, and you look at the second half of the season and they took off. I feel like in this case, I don't think on the offensive end, and they're not playing hard. I just think that you don't have a lot of guys that can score goals. And when that happens, your margin for error is super low and you can't give away bad goals at all. And you have to have, you know, average to above average to good goaltending, which maybe they haven't gotten. That's a separate thing. But you can't give up good looks if you're not going to score at the other end.
No, and this is kind of like the kinda late red lull in recruiting. So, like, who's the top freshman forward on this team?
Is there one?
Van Wy is a freshman.
He is a freshman, yeah.
But so Michigan has always had the ability to bring in a high-scoring freshman who's going to just put up points immediately.
But, I mean, who did they bring in last year?
Norris. I mean, he was
top, but he wasn't.
He was a first-round pick.
Yeah. And
he was a part of a scoring line. Like, he wasn't an instant star.
No, Norris. That's right. Anthony also showed me, remember, like, a Westland or a Gustav
Westland?
Yeah, he has, like, 9 points on Ohio State's top line now.
I mean, is that good for a top line player? Not really.
Is it better than, like, what if you put him on the third line?
Sure.
Or the fourth line? I'm just saying, like, you know, the last 2 years, other than, like, Quinn Hughes and maybe Norris, who you have to think both those guys after this year.
Well, yeah, and that's
probably in the league. And
but there isn't that guy in this class. And they got Cam York for next year, and they have a couple of guys who are a little bit older now.
Beecher's coming in. Okay.
I mean, he's going to be a first-round pick. He doesn't get top-line time on the USA team because it's the most ridiculous USA team in all history. But, like, they have Beecher, and I think, you know, Kalen Kefuk will be interesting. He was almost a point per game.
But, I mean, now the problem is it's December, and we're talking about next year.
Well, I'm just saying, like, the reasons that this doesn't look like a typical Michigan team is that they had this long period where it's like, is Red going to retire? Is he not going to retire? Where I don't think he was really recruiting all out because he's, you know, 77. And at that point, it's like, well, this is kind of a natural reaction.
Well, they lost a lot last year, and they had two guys that graduated last year that were four-year players and solid contributors for their last couple of years, and they don't have anybody. They didn't replace any of those guys.
No.
And like, they just moved everyone up a line, and then they tried to patch in some guys on the third or fourth line, and all those guys are, I mean, honestly, it, you know, I don't like to get down on people and stuff, but, like, most of the bottom two lines look like they're just mixes of fourth line guys. And, like, you remember, like, Jimmy Lambert last night, he was on the power play, got the puck on the left wing, and just swung and missed and fell down and then took a penalty.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, that, you know, maybe some guys just aren't as talented, and that's, you know, I'm not going to hate on a guy for not being good at something, but, like.
Well, Lambert is a guy who was going to Alaska, and then they fired their coach, and he's like, all right, I'm going to hang around CHL for another year. And Michigan needed to fill a hole in the roster, and so that's what they, and then, you know, they're bringing in guys like Olmstead and Van Wy, who was an Army commit. Like, you know, those guys can be pluggers. They can be J.J. Swistak.
And they might be all right as a junior or senior, but
if you get lucky, yeah. But
I mean, I think they hit a home run with Slaker because he was an overager, right?
But there's way too many of those guys on this roster.
That's what I mean. And so that's where I'm like, okay, at a certain point, who's going to score these goals? You said the power play. And you're right. And you're right. And that's what needs to happen is they can't give away any goals. They are going to have to win special teams every night and hope that their top line, maybe their kind of hardworking second line, contributes. And then maybe they win. The problem is that they've played two of the three worst teams in the Big Ten at home and don't really have points to show for it.
Well, you know, it's going to be an off year. That's what it's going to be. And maybe next year isn't going to be that much better. Because when, you know,
and that's the thing I'm looking at is kind of like, well, other teams reload and they do things, and Michigan is.
Well, so what happened when Mel got hired is that this 2019 class had nobody in it. It had like two people in it. And, you know, the way hockey recruiting works, almost the entire hockey recruiting world was already committed to somewhere else. And Michigan got lucky that BC is apparently in a complete free fall, and they picked off Cam York, they picked off Johnny Beecher. Those are two first-round picks, probably. But there's no depth in that class. It's kind of like, you remember that football class that had Donovan Warren and Ryan Mallett and nobody else?
Oh, yeah.
That's what these classes are, because Michigan's been able to get some high-profile guys, but, you know, the kind of depth.
Yeah, the four-year starters, the Luke Mays.
Right. Those guys aren't in this class. 2020 is coming. So 2020, they still have the two headliners in Power and Bakunov, but they also have Josh Grohl. They also have Austin Swankler. They also have, oh, I forget his name, Truscott, the national team.
And they just got another nice defenseman from out west for the 2021, right? I mean, that Edwards
kid. And so, like, you're going to see Michigan come back up here because of the way that the Berenson era ended and the way hockey recruiting works. There's just this kind of, like, fart noise middle period here, and that's where we are. Hopefully they can get better.
But they also had, I mean, they turned down Samuelson, right? And he's looked real good. We saw him. And then Bodie Wilde was supposed to be in this class, and he's gone now. And
well, I don't know.
And exactly. Anthony's like, the OHL looks good with him. And there might be stories with them, and I'm just saying that,
Bodie Wilde, I don't think, was going to be eligible.
Yeah, I've heard things like that. And
so what is Michigan supposed to do about that?
That's correct. I guess it's just frustrating.
Doesn't decommit from Harvard and then commit to Michigan and then, whoops, I'm going to go to the OHL without a reason.
Yeah.
If he decommits from Harvard to go to the OHL, that's one thing.
Yeah.
Like, I just, you know, there's reasons that...
Samuelson,
I don't know what happened. I'm, like, that's the thing where, like, he committed to Red, right? And then there was a new coach, and I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Like, I think his brother was going to be a walk-on here, and then he ended up at Western, and maybe he just decided to go with his brother. I don't know. But, like, if you look at the recruiting that's going forward, it's much better, and it's because this is what Michigan needs to do and was not doing.
Yeah, and you, like you said, you need to start all this when these kids are, like, in eighth grade or ninth grade. And
I mean, they literally had a commit from an eighth grader, and now he's a ninth grader. I'm just telling you how it is, man.
Yeah.
Like, that David Sills thing that happened in football is, like, all of college hockey recruiting. He had a lot of points for his middle school.
Well, regardless, it's...
Brendan Brisson coming in.
It's going to be tough. They might win games. And you know what? Honestly, like, Anthony made this point on the Hockey Cast, and we talked last night about it, too, and he says, you know, they're being well-coached. Especially with the forwards, they're doing what you need to do when you have the kind of talent. You're dumping the puck in, you're trying to win physical battles, you're throwing it at the net. The thing is that, you know, if the bounces don't go your way, what are you going to do? And you're hoping to kind of get lucky, you're hoping to get some tips, you're hoping that the goalie doesn't see something or whatever. And
even the top line, you know, North has some goals, but he doesn't really strike me as a guy who's converting at a particularly high rate. Like, he gets a lot of opportunities in front of the net, and then... You know, he converts some of them.
Yeah.
He's not a sniper. He's more of a, you know, an Eric Nystrom guy.
I mean, he's a two-way center.
Yeah, and he's not...
And on a good team, he's probably a really good second-line center.
Exactly.
And
Slaker's not on the top line, and... You know.
No, I mean, he's... And, yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, everybody's probably one line up from where they need to be.
Lockwood, I feel, is a guy who...
And he shows some flashes, too. Yeah. The problem is then is, like, you know, when you're, like, that's your focus line. And when teams see that, they're going to be like, we need to get these guys locked down. We need our best players on the ice, whenever they are, and we can live with everything else.
Yep.
And no one else is making them pay.
Yep. So it's just, I think that we're both on the same page here where we don't really think that there is a second half renaissance coming.
I mean, you hope so, but I don't think it's going to be... anything that's within Michigan's control.
Right. All right, so that's hockey. Probably happier if you just listen to the basketball portion of this podcast, but oh well.
You made me do it. Thank you for listening to the MGO Podcast. I'm David Nasternak, along with Brian Cook. And in case you're wondering, yes, Brian and I did the arm lock thing as we left the conference room.